And it's episode number 62 of the Esports Central podcast. We're back. This is episode, again, number 62, recorded for the 3rd of October, 2019. I'm Carmel, joined by Mr. Prophecy, and Gutter Lily, you back with us, finally.
Said I'll be back. You know why.
Yeah, I mean, the IQ of the podcast just increased by about 50 points with you attending, so...
Oh.
It's good to have you back.
I feel like that's not a lot of IQ points, but I'll take it.
No, it's an average. It increased by an average of 50.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Nadia making us all look smarter here.
Yep.
I'm concerned about this. I think I'm being mocked.
Never. No, we're being mocked.
Yeah, we're mocking ourselves because we're that scared of you. You know, if we give you the chance to mock us, we might never recover.
Yeah, well, I mean, Penguin led the flames of that.
I heard a rumor that Penguin is the destroyer of he's the gatekeeper of South African esports. Prof, do you believe that shit?
Well, some people do. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, okay. That's rough. So, Nadia, you back?
Back
in time for something special. We won't touch onto it just yet because that's just a side story for our podcast. We'll give an overview of our podcast. This is Esports Central. We talk about locals news, international news, and usually should talk at the start of the podcast. What's actually going on today? We haven't made fun of Glenn. We haven't made fun of Marvel movies. We haven't made fun of Saga and Tite. What are we even doing?
Every time when I'm gone for a week, I come back and then I think of a new slogan.
All right.
And then I thought, this time, like, Esports Central podcast. And then it's going to be like, hot takes and what should have been outtakes.
Yes, that's actually pretty good.
That sums up the podcast, I think, very well.
Yeah, I mean, basically all the outtakes are whenever Camille opens his mouth, I'd guess.
Yikes, Chief. Well played. You know, I'm the host now. Don't I get some form of respect? We never used to make fun of X streams.
We always used to make fun of X streams.
That's actually true. Even in the WhatsApp group,
Stupid hat.
Hat streams. I tried to make him wear a fucking, you know, a cap. And he was like, no ways. He looked
like
he was about...
cap?
Yeah.
And?
No, that doesn't work. You can't wear glasses and a peak cap. It just doesn't work. And it's like, okay, all right. Didn't realize it was such a touchy subject. Extremes, serious things. Extremes does raise his voice when we speak about Counter-Strike and those sort of things. Which is kind of the esports we talk about. But this time, we're going to start off the podcast by talking about the best game, the most important news of the podcast. Sumail, the king, EG... found his new roster is confirmed. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up, talking about NA Dota, is because we actually have, I think, the first time in the history of NA Dota, competitive NA Dota, because last week I spoke about the new EG roster. We had Ramsey joining in offlane. We had Arbeid joining on mid, right? So I was like, whoa, EG got a new team. Things are changing up. And it was like the question, where is Sumail going to go? Well, Sumail's found himself. Obviously, the team doesn't have a name yet. They haven't got the organization backing it just yet. But obviously, Jack KBBQ is the manager guy. And let me just tell you the lineup here, Prophecy. It's Sumail, CCNC, Yawar, MSS, and SVG Dota. This is the...
Yeah. So, so finally, Sumail and his brother get to play against or play with each other at a pro level.
Yeah, so that is one great aspect of this team. Obviously, Yawar moving from carry to offlane, which is a bit of a change, which actually Ramsey's also did that. I think a lot of top-tier Dota 2 carries are moving to offlane now. It's pretty weird. And then... obviously, Sumail's playing carry now as well. He left the mid lane. It's a choice. He actually wanted to play pass one. He thought he could do a good job, so he's moving there. And of course, the other three fellows, CCNC, MSS, and SVG, in my opinion, are the best NA players that didn't play for EG. Obviously, EG never really had NA players. So they're just the best NA players. So I think this squad is seriously interesting. And in my non-hot take opinion, think this is the best NA Dota squad. EG can take their second place and fuck themselves with it.
No, but EG's not an NA squad.
Oh, that's true. That's true. They're just going to fucking...
That's the whole joke about them being called Team USA, when it's like, you do realize that like 60% of that team is not American.
But yeah, I think this actually hypes up NA Dota, because for a long time, even though EG's not a North American squad, they've resided in the USA for many, many years, right? And they, by far, they're the only good team in NA, to be perfectly honest. And they've been smashing the region forever. And last year, there was also the controversy of them not even being an NA team, because although they played in the qualifiers there, they were staying in Europe, bootcamping in Europe. They didn't really provide anything to the scene. I'm hoping that sort of changes coming to this year. Otherwise, I think Valve's going to need to step in and make some rule adjustments. But for now, I think it's pretty cool. You're going to have really competitive qualifiers. You have two top-tier teams. Obviously, we haven't seen these teams play or in action yet, but just on the looks of it, very high-skilled teams. And yeah, it's going to look good. And of course, I got to give a tribute to Sumail and EG, that he's been there for 5 years. He started off his career there and finally left. And I don't know under what circumstances he left, though, because I think it's kind of not said whether he was kicked or he left. It was quite a cryptic tweet as well that he made. But yeah, found himself in a new home, and I'm super curious to see how the squad does.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, he probably was removed from the team because, he might want to play with his brother, but I don't think that he would, like, leave EG to create a new org to go play under them, even if it is with his brother. So, like, I think it's fair to guess that he probably was removed.
Well, in his tweet, he was like, well, I wanted to end my career in EG, but unfortunately this couldn't happen. So that kind of hinted at it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I don't think that squad was working, in my opinion. I don't...
No, they'd run that same lineup too many times. Just like, Sumail and Arteezy just don't work on the same team. Like, everybody wants it to happen, but it's just like, you know, it's not quite oil and water, but it's sort of like, what can I describe?
It's like
vinegar. It's like vinegar and water. Like, yeah, they both sort of like go together, but it's like at the end of the day, it's still like something's off.
Yeah, I can get behind that. But yeah, this team looking balanced, man. I'm super curious to see how King does it. I have faith in the squad. Nadia, any expert analysis you have to add for the Dota 2 thing?
Yeah, no one cares. Let's move on.
All right.
Let's talk about America's game. Overwatch League.
Overwatch League, which is going to be apparently the NFL of esports if Jeff gets his way.
The worldwide NFL of esports based in America with all 28 of its teams from America.
Yeah, well, give or take. Anyway.
But it's worldwide, guys. It's worldwide. Definitely has a team based in Chengdu, China and Seoul, South Korea.
I'm trying to think. Why does that Mr. Worldwide?
Oh, Mr. Worldwide is... what is his name? I just know that he's Mr. Who?
Pitbull.
Pitbull, yeah. He just calls himself, like, it's like rules for a Pitbull appearance in your song. He has to be allowed to say Mr. Worldwide at least once.
And then once he says that, you know you can turn off the song because Pitbull's in it.
Yeah.
Basically. So, what happened this weekend?
Overwatch League finals!
Oh, it was the finals!
That was annoying. I'm sorry. I was actually so incredibly hyped for the game, which is weird because I took like almost 2 week break from playing Overwatch, for my ARK adventures. But
say for your mental health?
What was it actually hype? Because like the pictures and stuff, like I didn't watch it. I was just watching something else.
Remember,
but like I saw the hype for it. It looked really hype, and then.
I sent
like
you guys
20 minutes later, I just saw like, oh, the one
Jane.
Team got wrecked 4-0.
Oh, wait. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, I sent you guys that tweet from Jane, like it was half an hour because I was skipping the Zed performance because honestly, I don't care about that. And I was just panicking because I was looking at the crowd and it looked empty as hell. Look at me, because I know that we used up our swearing like quota already. Not swearing.
Never. Nadia. We've got infinite amount more. Better fucking do it.
Empty as fuck. So I had a look at that, had a mild panic attack, actually opened my my Twitch open up and I started watching. And it actually filled up that, Philly Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia. 12,000 seater. It was supposedly sold out. And we spoke about like a couple of weeks ago about how expensive this was. So... Mm-hmm. Sold out crowd. It looked fantastic. The production looked great. The only issue was right at the very end when they actually showed whoever won. They for like 2 seconds they showed the wrong name. a bit of a tiny little oof at the end of I think what was quite a little triumph, but it was okay. So you guys know obviously it was San Francisco Shock versus Vancouver Titans, as we had confirmed about 2 weeks ago. And pretty much what I had predicted in February when I joined this, I think it was February when I joined this podcast. But anyways, God, I'm good at this. but yeah, it was unfortunately another year where we ended with a bit of a tidal wave just running over a bit of a one-sided, I almost want to say, finals. We've had it previously with Spitfire. This year, we had it with Vancouver Titans just... The first game that they were playing was actually their pick. It was on, what is it called, Lijiang Tower. They started and they lost that. And I don't know if that just took the oomph out of them because
It got nasty after that.
It got nasty. So, yeah, the second map, like, dude, I was like so into Eichenwald was the second map. What was it? They were, good God, it was so fast. The Shock just, they basically subbed out Sinatra and Stryker, and they just went in there with the Bastion May combo. And you could not believe how quickly they took that first point. It just like snowballed effect going onto capturing the third point. And I just thought, okay, at this point, that's Vancouver Titans was basically looking like a gold team. They were looking like me playing in VS League. It was sad. Which sounds horrible, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, these are supposed to be the top two teams in the whole league, and like the one just got utterly thumped. It was like a big brother beating up a little baby brother.
But the thing is, you're like, I want to say that maybe the points, especially at that point, I don't feel like it was exactly them being thumped yet, because they did the same thing on Eichenwald, and they managed to do it by like hell or high water. They managed to do it, and they pushed through. And then Temple of Anubis came, Gibraltar came, and it was just I feel like that May Bastion combo. They kept bringing out the Bastion, and it's such a stupid, hateful, cancerous class, but it works so well. Like, I don't know.
That's some real hatred in the voice, right?
A Bastion being hated in 2K19, what is going on here?
Bastion's been hated since he came out, but I mean, it's just so strong, and I just know that, like, you couldn't. I feel like they couldn't really counter it, and up until that point, it was just, I think by the time we got to Temple of Anubis, I felt like the oomph was definitely out of Vancouver Titans. Like they're trying, but you can just see them sitting playing. There's no longer that fire that they kind of needed to do that well. So Gibraltar
came. I don't think it's that though. To be fair, like I'll give an example.
Like I think there's like a mental thing to it as well. Like they were getting, you know, like pub stomped towards the end there.
Maybe, because I think I guess it is a common thing, especially in finals in esports, that after like the first two games, if it doesn't go well enough and the momentum is like really with another team, it also looks like the one team just like you hit like a zone, right? Yeah, but then I guess the other side does crumble at the house of cards. I guess what you're saying is correct, Nadia. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you better be. But also, we obviously still saw a lot of the double shield, the Sigma, the newest character, getting a lot of play. Orisa getting some play. And as boring as people actually called it, it was great to see like Shock play it and play it well. I think going into... Remember, we've got nothing now until about next year. When is it again? February, March? When is it?
It's like a four-month gap almost.
Essentially. So by the time the next season comes by, this is going to be gone. And hopefully we'll already be in the next, almost from the same meta as what we have at the moment.
So hopefully the death of Goats is long, long in the past.
Yeah, we'll probably be in dive, actually. We'll post dive again. Yeah.
I'll make a prediction. Overwatch League starts next year, January the 17th. On January the 19th, we'll be recording the podcast and we'll be like, yeah, and the Overwatch meta is looking so trash. Blizzard really need to learn how to patch the game better. Oh, is Overwatch League really a success? I don't think the conversation is going to change at all, to be honest.
It's February 8th. It starts, 2020 season starts February 8th. It's going to be between New York and Dallas. Oh, so I might actually even watch that and cry whilst Dallas gets murdered.
Again.
And gets murdered again. But anyway, I think it was, from all looks, like if next year's homestand games are going to be like the final, I don't expect it's going to be that big, because obviously this was now the culmination of the three that they already had this year. And it was a very big thing. It was great to see fans from, you know, other teams actually there, people checking it out. I saw some posts around of people, I don't know if they're bots, but people saying, oh, they don't really watch esports, but they were in Philly, so they went to go check out this thing, and it was fantastic, and people were explaining to them how it works, and they could follow the game. And I'm like, wow, all of that sounds great. I hope you're not a bot. if that is in fact the case, because then that's great. And like I said, so next year, we'll obviously have the homestand thing going full blast, and I'm hoping the viewership numbers that we actually got in this final and will carry over, I almost want to say. I noted at some point, I know you, Prof, sent me a different link. When I was watching, it was about, on Twitch, about 273,000 people at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And it stayed between that and 230, 240 for most of when I was watching. And I think you showed me like 300 odd up.
Yeah, that's from, I think they are called esports charts. Let me see if I can find them. But yeah, it's like esports charts. They're basically, I mean, I don't know where they get their numbers from either. So it could be esports charts. Just if you guys want to check on Twitter, it's just at esports charts. And yeah, that was the numbers that they gave. That like your guys' peak was 325,355.
It was at least this time around we were, I said we, as if I belong there, or work there. This time around it actually beat out the ESL CS.
It was beating it at the time. Twitch. Yeah, because I think Overwatch had higher numbers on Twitch, but then the CSGO was split between a couple. And then also the CSGO runs like multiple channels in different languages, which sort of they add all together. I don't know if that's kind of cheating, but it sort of feels like it at times. So.
So yeah.
I mean, I think it's just fair to say that the Overwatch League, even though this podcast has its doubts almost every single week, the finals was a massive success. Yeah. I mean, almost 300k on stream, all 300k on stream, sellout stadium, socials was great. Fucking stellar event, man.
Yeah, definitely. So like I said, just a slight little bit, tiniest of little mistake at the end there. And then obviously your Fnatic's merch is absolute crap. Fix that.
Yeah, the thing is, like, I don't think anybody's ever really had a problem with the production of Overwatch once the observing was sort of, like, you know, sorted
once
out.
Once that's been added, it's I think a lot easier to follow as well. The casting was great.
Better be. I mean, if you've seen who they bought to get the casting, like they pretty much bought like the creme de la creme of casting talent to get it.
So I loved it. I really enjoyed watching it. It actually makes me a bit more, because it really, maybe it was just the negativity of GOATs still, you know, beating the life out of me that made me a bit negative about Overwatch. And I think that's why it needed a bit of a break. But this was really, it was fantastic. And now we've basically only got the World Cup to look forward to. And then it's nothing for months.
All right, but while we're on the topic of Overwatch, I just want to talk about the San Francisco Sharks run one more time. I think, honestly, and I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, in a playoff like format of all time in the lower, obviously sports doesn't have lower brackets, this, you lose, you out. But this is the best playoff run I think I've ever fucking seen, like ever in anything.
Out of the losers bracket?
4-0, 4-0, 4-0, and in the finals, 4-0. They
16-0'd from the lower bracket, basically.
Yep.
And then 4-0 the finals as well. They won 20 straight games of Overwatch.
No. The finals included is 16-0.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that's nuts. Like, 16-0 is like no joke.
It's just like, also just looking at the season that they've had, it's a very deserving win. Yeah. I was really hoping that Vancouver Titans could put up a bigger fight, but I don't like. I know, obviously, coming out of Runaways, they were the GOATs team, and I don't know if it's the adapting to a new meta or what it was, but this was not the team that I had imagined. Like what you saw and how they played was not what I would have pictured the finals were going to be. But maybe that's just finals. You don't know.
Yeah, esports finals are rough, right? A team can look so great the whole year, but you get into that sort of TI final vibe, and the team that's feeling it on the day, it's almost impossible to stop them, it feels like, you know?
Mm. I mean, Runaways, weren't they like historically a team that like struggled to actually win in the big games?
No, they won literally everything.
Was it them? All right. Okay, they won I remember there was like one team that like... When before the Overwatch League started, they were like historically just like they couldn't win. Like they were beasts. They just couldn't finally like nail the end.
My actually biggest thought just sticking on Runaways is now who's going to buy the next generation?
Well, I mean,
for next year.
Yeah, that all depends on what comes out of Korean contenders. It's been pretty good so far.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's where we are with Overwatch.
Yeah. We actually did a positive sketch on Overwatch on Esports Central Podcast. What the fuck is going on?
I don't know. I'm like all positivity after that finals. Like, I don't know, my pipe dreams are probably going to come to nothing, but it was fantastic. I loved it. I want more.
Yeah, Overwatch League playoffs, it's like a hype time of year, right? If you're going to copy American sports, playoff season for the NBA is the fucking best shit in the world, okay? Don't fucking at me on that. Come second place after TI, of course, nobody at me on that, but like, man, that shit's awesome. Yeah, Overwatch League lived up to the hype, man. It lived up to the hype. Anything else you want to add there, Nadia or Prof?
I think I'm good.
Right? Profi's Gucci too. So that's our international esports for this week. Yeah, but we're not done yet.
No, we're not done yet.
You still have to address all the
just a small amount of rage. Just a small amount of rage.
You know that minor expo that happens every year in South Africa? It's like no big deal. It's called Rage, baby. The OG fucking gaming event in South Africa. And yeah, it's a good one. I think this year I went to Rage Prophecy. You were in Port Elizabeth, but I was there. It was quite nice. There was no like super big stage this year, but there was like all these little like cool stages and shit, and not like very little, I mean like pretty big, but no like VS Gaming stand, you know, which kind of made the expo itself, I'm not gonna say a little bit better, but a bit more spacious, I would like to say.
I mean, look, I wasn't there last year, and obviously last year had like almost no esports of any real kind, so that apparently was like a very empty one. Obviously coming just about a month after Comic-Con this time, a week after Comic-Con. But I do think that with the addition of esports this year, like at least what I saw on stream, it did look fuller than what it was last year.
I haven't,
but like that's just like pure opinion. Like I've got no numbers to back that up.
I've literally only saw pictures. It looked pretty cool, but I don't know what was happening. I actually don't really know what the stand that you were at looked like.
So I don't know. It is. I also unfortunately don't have stats on this, but I listen from hearsay, right? I've had some people say that last year the Saturday was significantly busier than this year. I mean, some people are saying this year was good. I think for me, there's a consistent level of buzz I expect at Rage, and I think this year kind of met that. Obviously, the Friday was quiet, but quite as usual as in Rage, but the Saturday was pumping, man. It was busy.
Yeah, like I said, it's. I mean, obviously, with Comic-Con right before, there's very few people that can afford to go splash money on Comic-Con and then go splash money at Rage, so they sort of have to pick one, which is a pity. I think we've obviously had the debate before. One probably should just move to earlier in the year.
So yeah, does Rage still, like, obviously we've only had the one Rage in Cape Town, and I'm not going up for that on my own penny.
And that was not real Rage.
No, it wasn't. That's what I'm asking. Like, is it, like, the exhibitors that are there, is it also, so it's not just, you know, let's say, EVTech and stuff like that.
Some of them are the same.
We had, like, you know, a lot of, like, Reader's Den and some geeky shit, which I, whoa.
You're talking about like the marketplace.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, like, is, because I'm assuming all those people would have been at Comic-Con as well.
Historically, like
the Funko Pop, like, stand.
Yeah, like that was more Comic-Con, but there were parts of it at Rage.
Yeah, so let's say at Rage there was a couple of those things. We had an artist alley at Rage. The Funko Pop stand was there. We had a lot of geek stuff there as well. I don't think, obviously, not the same level of Comic-Con because that's not what Rage is about. But it had its fair share as well, yeah. But I think, sorry to cut you off here, Nadia, but...
No, fucking... I just mean, like, I feel like if those things were there, you wouldn't go buy stuff at Comic-Con and then go for geeky stuff to Rage. It's like a different market.
It's so fucking stupid, the split market. Why the... we have 365... I know we said this 100 times in the podcast, but is the message ever going to fucking get through? 365 days in a year. There's 52 separate weekends. Why the hell would you have the event literally 3 days apart? You're trying to undercut the market. Okay, I understand that Comic-Con, Read Exhibitions, want to put the big dick on the table, be like, yo, we the bad boy in town. But you guys are taking a hit too. I would say more than 1,000 tickets were given away for Comic-Con. A sellout event is not a sellout event if you're giving away all the fucking tickets.
You know, actually having that thought with regards to the Overwatch finals. Like, I wonder if they did give so many away, but I don't want to say it. But now that you said it,
Yeah, this is positivity only for Blizzard this week, okay, Nadia? Yeah. Don't want to hear that
today. Thank you.
But it's all, so you're undercutting, you all right, going back to the fucking Comic-Con thing. It's not just Comic-Con, and like, NAG have done it themselves when roasting Rage and Rush and other events. I'm not gonna pretend like these guys are the good guys, because nobody's a fucking good guy in this situation. But you guys are fucking each other over. You think this is working, but it isn't. 365 days. One start of the year, one end of the year. Finish. Done. Make the fucking change for next year. Otherwise, boycotting both. Okay, not really. I actually went to both, so yeah. I can't say it's not
really a hypocrite that can't even, like, he's trying to threaten things that he can't even back up.
Yeah. But you know what? I actually, you know what? You know what the saddest thing about my Comic-Con experience? I know this is the Rage episode. Yeah. Is that I actually bought a ticket to Comic-Con. I didn't get one for free.
Sure.
That's bad, man.
What a train wreck. Can't believe Camille had to buy a ticket.
Yeah. I'm not saying like I'm important. I'm just saying because there's so many were fucking given away, okay? If I wanted to say I was important, I would have brought up my Rage Exhibitors pass and my golden bracelet, motherfuckers.
I think if anybody knew how many tickets were going to be given away to Comic-Con, they would not have bought. Because anybody that I spoke to, because I was like busy sharing the fact that Esports Central was giving away tickets, and a lot of the people that I know in Joburg already bought tickets, and it's like, well, what's the bloody point?
Yeah. I mean, usually they do takeaways after they realize that they don't have enough tickets sold. So.
Yeah. So that's just how I like, if I was there, like next year, I wouldn't bother to buy a ticket. I would just wait and try my luck because if there's like 1,000 tickets in total being given away, you're basically guaranteed to get a ticket like at least the week before.
Yes, it completely works like that. An event with like 30,000 people visiting, you guaranteed for that one fucking ticket you're going to win from 1,000.
Dude, like everybody that I told that they can go enter competitions here, there, or there, got a ticket.
Okay.
Do not come at me. I have stats.
Stats don't lie. Okay, I'm kidding. Actually, I did the same thing for a lot of people and I got like 4 friends winning tickets as well. Shout out to Non-Sellout Event and Esports Central. And VS Gaming for hooking up the peeps, you know, with the free tickets. Sounds like a great way to run a successful day. Okay, back to Rage. So there was esports going on this weekend at Rage. There was obviously the MSI stand, which we talk about in our interview to a much larger extent. That comes out on Friday. Special guest, check that out. But yeah,
for the competitive side of things was the
Counter Strike.
Yeah, the rivalry. Sorry, Republic of Gamers. Republic of Gamers. Invitational 8-team event had qualifiers going on for quite a while. Double elimination, which was good to see, although upper bracket was best one, which is kind of a pity, but either way,
we go with 3-day event. I get it.
Yeah, you're gonna have to cut somewhere. You can either do double elim and have you can either have double elim and have best one somewhere, and it's either in upper bracket or lower bracket, or you can have single elim with best of threes all the way. So it is what it is. And I do think the event was very, very well run by Metal State. There was an issue on the Saturday night. Completely not Metal State's fault. The entirety of the world's Valve servers decided to have a collective dump and died, which meant that they actually had to move one of their games that had actually just started onto the Sunday morning. But either way, again, usual suspects were in the race. This time we had Sin 5 qualifying through the upper bracket to get the first spot in the final, and Goliath actually made the second one. And I sound a little bit surprised, but it's because Goliath looked like they were struggling again. They got beaten in the upper bracket by Sin 5 and then really had to tough it out against Energy, knocked out Energy, made it to the upper bracket, or made it to the grand final, and then just 2-0'd Sin 5. So congratulations to Goliath Gaming, certainly the best team in South Africa for the weekend. There has been some debate on Twitter as to whether they're the best team of the year. I think it would be hard to look past Energy for the whole year, just given the events and the number of placings they have. But congratulations to Goliath. Very, very well played by them, and it's good to see them finally, maybe getting over those late game and late tournament situation issues that they've had in the past.
Yeah, and I think also saying in the cast as well is like, at big events, especially on LAN, the Goliath Gaming squad has had like a fucking mental block. They just couldn't get over the Energy Esports hurdle the entire year, and then they finally managed to do it. So that's pretty lit, I think, for them. I think Counter-Strike in South Africa is actually in such a good place. Like, it's so competitive. You have so many good teams that can just do damage all around, you know?
Yeah, it really was very, very well done. Massive props to Goliath for finally conquering their demons. because they have seemed to have struggled unless it's against lesser opposition. And this time, I mean, they beat their kryptonite for the year, Energy, and then they beat Sin 5, who's a highly rated team. So massive congrats to Goliath, and, you know, can't wait for more.
Yeah, and actually, I followed a lot of CS this past Rage weekend, believe it or not. I've casted Apex Legends, followed CS. It's like I'm having a fucking mid-caster crisis, you know? But, you know, it was real nice. Obviously, ESR won New York. We'll talk a bit about much more next week. But CS was also real nice. I mean, in the game between Goliath and Energy on that Saturday morning, luckily it got postponed because then I was up early enough to watch it because I was sleeping early that night on a Saturday night. Don't hate me, people. Yes, I have no social life. But it was so good. Like, the CS was really nice. Adaro had one of the most monstrous performances. Like, yo, it was actually insane. It was real good CS. And I want to talk about, obviously, not about the CS, but about the match predictor that Big Five Games had. They did it for ECL. They did it now again for this ROG Invitational thing. Yeah. And I think it's such a cool thing. Obviously, it's a new way to interact with games. It's a new way for fans to engage. And I think it's such an innovative way. Like, if you think about fantasy in general, it's such a big part of like, sports, especially with, like, football, fantasy football, with American football, with any sports, fantasy is a big thing. So the fact that we have this, South African esports, is actually fucking insane.
Yeah, it really is great to see. It's obviously been in the pipes for a very, very long time, and to see it finally get used. I mean, like you're saying, it encourages people to be a little bit more interactive with the actual stream. You know, you get to show your support for a team rather than, like, if you can't make it, if you're sitting in Cape Town or you're sitting in Durban or wherever, you can at least, you know, add in the match predict, which gives you just that little bit of extra thing. And, you know, We always mention it, obviously, gambling is a thing overseas, and maybe one day they do modify the laws in South Africa, but that's the kind of thing that you'd use for gambling.
Is fantasy really gambling?
In America, they declare it gambling.
Oh, wow.
So there are changes, but I'm saying, like, just that, like, right now, the match predictors literally just choose that. In its most base form, yes, it is gambling. There's just nothing attached to it right now.
I mean,
the only thing that gambling would add is that you add prices, but I'm saying, like, the only difference gambling would do is it would add that you actually have to put your own money in. That's the only difference it would add. So,
hey, if that happens, micro esports South Africa. No, I'm kidding. I think the way they do prize, I think for, like, brand activations and stuff as well.
I mean, if you look how much money gambling makes, yeah, it definitely will grow esports in SA. Because gambling, like, is definitely going to start adding money to the prize pool.
Just still looking at the fact that, like, literally all online gambling is illegal in South Africa.
That is obviously the problem in South Africa, is that any online gambling in South Africa is
illegal. That's not if it's a problem. It's just like a law.
No, a problem for esports to grow is what I mean. Mm. Like, obviously, esports has an issue of, it's been well known for advertising gambling to minors, which is not something I condone. But, you know, if you're over 18, if you're of sound mind, I can't see why gambling should be illegal to a person.
Yeah. And I know this is not the topic of the discussion, but I also think, like, on Prophecy's point about the gambling to minors thing, there is a certain point where your loot box shit, and calling all you fucking game devs out about this, it's a predatory practice. Fucking accept that with the gambling laws coming. I don't agree with the laws specifically, but don't act like, what does EA call it?
Surprise mechanics. Mechanics.
Did you see, is it in France where loot boxes are now literally,
it's banned, but they Valve just released their thing a couple of hours ago about how they're going to do it. So you have to buy a key. That key scans what's in the box, and then it tells you what you'll get out of that box.
Oh, so, like, pre-discloses or just the value?
Yeah, it pre-discloses it.
So, okay, so here's just the thing. Obviously, like, CS works the same in the sense. So I remember back in the day when TF2 was still a thing, you would get, you'd save up all your metal and you just trade it for a key, and then you'd use your key to open a loot box. And you've got the opportunity to obviously get, like, a golden frying pan or whatnot.
Yeah.
And that thing can be worth, like, $100 and up into the thousands that some crazy person will pay for these things. So I can scan my key and will tell me I can get that.
Yes.
Damn.
So obviously there's going to be, it's rife for abuse, but apparently if you scan the box, you have to claim that box before you can buy a new one or scan a new one.
But that doesn't really change anything.
Yeah, that doesn't
change
anything because now you're already...
You already know what's in it, so you can scam someone else by selling them a box that you know is going to be worth 10 cents. When they're...
Oh, no. Basically, the only thing it's changing is that you're now, you are forced
to
buy it.
You have to claim the box. You don't have to... you can buy the box, but remember, you haven't opened it, so you can sell it to somebody else.
And then they have to buy a key to scan it as well.
Well... If they can sell it to people, like if you could check the box and see that the box has a 10 cent skin in it, you're like, I definitely don't want that.
Because it's worth less than the value of the box.
Yeah, but the box still exists. So you can sell it to some other guy for like the value of a box. Go back, scan another box. Oh, it's a knife worth $5,000. I'll buy that box, open it, and there we go.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if this might ultimately have an effect on what items are worth.
Yeah, I mean, there is a great likelihood. It all just depends on, whether the boxes are going to be region locked for France, because that is a possibility, obviously. I'd guess that's probably what Valve does.
Well, I'm real interested in the French boxes, huh?
I mean,
it's a do-us.
Like, the thing is, the French government brought that in, so, like, boxes are illegal. You're not allowed to sell them anymore. That's why Valve has introduced this. Whether this is actually going to get around the legal implications, I'd guess it does, because Valve, I'd almost certainly say, has an army of lawyers that will, you know, point out like this could get around it. But I mean, it does have an interesting impact, because skins and boxes are basically the reason responsible for why CSGO and Dota in particular like blew up so big.
Yeah. Especially the compendium in Dota, I think, changed the way gaming
Dota worked. Yeah.
No, I think I forget how Dota worked. I think the way it opened the eyes of so many to monetization methods in from games. I think it is a revolutionary thing. I don't want to give it all the credit to Compendium, because it's not like the first place it happened, but it opened many eyes.
For esports, I think it was revolutionary, because League of Legends is obviously, you know, you buy skins and all the rest, but you know what skin you're buying.
Right.
And that was just purely that was like a monetization option for the game itself, whereas Dota introduced that and then also made it part of the international, so you'd actually increase the value of the prize pool by contributing to the international, whereas League of Legends does like a very small version of that these days.
Yeah,
I think you can only buy like one skin that contributes to the prize pool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised LoL hasn't just stolen Dota's idea, and at this point, like, it's not even stealing, just fucking have crowdfunding for your event. It's not a big, just easy way to make money, man. Easy way to make money. Yeah, I think that is the wrap for the show. And it's time for our guest segment here on Esports Central Podcast. This is a guest I'm actually really excited to have on tonight. I'm not excited for other guests, or maybe I am. Who knows? The guest tonight is Burning Red, Mr. Nate. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Good on you, man. Thanks for having me.
Yes, absolute pleasure.
One of the founders of Game Time Media.
That is correct. And
sort of like a return to esports for you then, Nate, because you were in esports a while back, and then you sort of through circumstances mean that you couldn't be in esports, and you've come back.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely share a little bit about that as to what happened and all that. But yeah, it's good to be back. Obviously, with the new business, fresh look and feel in esports. I mean, a lot of the viewers will actually remember me from NAV TV days and the Quezzer days, etc. But yeah, that's awesome.
While we're talking about the past, you can give us the whole history then. How did you get into esports, actually?
Well, it actually started all the way back in 2000, if I'm not mistaken. Wow. 1999, sorry. 13 years old, I got into gaming. It was the release of... there was a couple of titles out at the time. There was Red Alert 1, there was StarCraft 1. I think it was just StarCraft, not Brood Wars as of yet. There was Quake 1, and then was obviously Counter-Strike, like a beta release, etc. So I got involved in esports or competitive gaming back then, but it was more on a local scale in Cape Town, because I'm originally from Cape Town, born and bred in Fishhook, where Beetle's from.
Beetle no longer exists, dude.
He's dead in our eyes. I know he no longer exists, but everyone knows him. You know,
yeah, everybody knows him because he's the grouchiest guy on the internet.
Well, look, I mean, yeah, it started all the way back in, about 99, then into 2000. I started to attend LANs, Cape Town, called Organized Chaos, OC. A lot of people know about OC. I was the kid with, you know, the computer case with all the stickers of the IP addresses next to on the side panel. I mean, I attended, geez, man, over probably like close to 100 of those events. My last one was at the Velodrome, of course. That was the last time that they were around. But, you know, all the fond memories was at the Thea Maree Sports Hall in Milnerton.
Isn't that where they used to carry, like, anybody that fell asleep used to get carried out and left on the fields?
I was one of those. I was carried out into the middle of the field on my stretcher, and it actually gave me a little bit of like a sleep disorder for a brief period of time. I think it was like 2-3 months. I couldn't sleep properly, thinking guys are going to carry me out on the field.
Yeah,
it was quite entertaining though. I did enjoy it. It was still a good joke. But yeah, like, you know, so it all started there. Then, you know, I was gaming for a good couple of years, you know, opened up, well, this is actually where NAV started, NAV Co. I started it with Beetle back then, and then it became Team NAV thereafter, and then it went quiet for like 2-3 years, because me and my ex-girlfriend, like, you know, we weren't exactly, how do I say, a gaming relationship. She was very much anti-gaming and stuff. She allowed me to play from time to time, but I kind of dropped it for a bit, and then I moved up to Johannesburg in 2010, and picked up the online scene again and started playing again. I got into Counter-Strike Source, made my own team called Team NAV at the time. We were one of the best Source teams, and then CSGO came out, and that's where the 1.6 crowd kind of joined us, and we had a bigger kind of Counter-Strike community, where I then continued to play for I think it was about 2 years or 3 years, etc. Then I got into playing Premier League Counter-Strike for DGL at the time. Yeah, the Telkom DGL. Got into the Premier League. Played a couple of seasons. And then I quit after my team kind of disbanded. And how it started for me was that I was invited to one of the Rage events by Force, not by Force, but a gentleman by the nickname of Force, to be a media admin for HLTV. And when I got there, I met up with Pac-Man and Lagbeast, who were the commentators. They obviously play Overwatch now. And they were commentating on a Counter-Strike tournament. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was the first CSGO event. And basically, yeah, from there, I met Pitar, who's co-founder of HLTV. I've known him since then. And me and him have a pretty good relationship. We chat from time to time. And then I got into the whole commentary thing. Where I thought, like, you know, Lagbeast and Pac-Man were a little bit more kind of casual about it. I thought, you know, there's definitely a market angle for getting commentary and streaming on the go. And I was actually quite fortunate enough, because the company I was working for, they had a WiMAX link at their office, and luckily for me, the office was the house that we stayed in. Yeah. So obviously through that WiMAX link, I had about, I think it was a 1.5 meg upload or something, and I started to stream, and I started to commentate games first and foremost for Telkom. At the time, I commentated arena events. I went to the first Liberty, my first Liberty LAN in 2013, where I met Reese, Wookie, met a few guys like Miles, etc. And then later on that year, I did my first international event, which was a I think it was a tier one event or tier two event. Sorry, not tier one, tier two. Tier 2 teams playing in it, remotely commentating on it, of course. I got about 25,000 concurrent viewers watching.
Back in the day when online games could still get that number.
Pretty much. I mean, yeah. Look, I mean, it was a. It was thanks to guys like CSGO Lounge and all of those type of cats that actually allowed it to happen, because obviously guys were like heavy into the skin betting at the time.
The glory days, man.
Yeah, before it was actually regulated and all that by Valve, which, you know, rightfully so, they had to do. And yeah, so then one thing led to another. I started to like band up with a couple of commentators. Telkom actually forced us to start an organization. So that it would be easier to manage commentators for their DGC events and that. And basically, DGC 2014, NavTV made its big mark where we did the Dota 2 Rage event upstairs. That was done by Halberd and his commentator. I think, Prof, you were with him.
Yeah.
And then I was doing Counter-Strike downstairs with Rook, with Wookie, XXXL, with Congo Carl. And then obviously we had Riddits doing the Dota stream downstairs. We had Fatso and Sexy Johnny doing Battlefield. We had Jan or Colin. That's what his name was. Well, that's what his name was. That did. He did League of Legends. And then, jeez, man, like, so it was quite a while ago. But like, anyway, so we broadcasted like a lot of. Titles for Telkom in 2014. We handled most of it, and then there was also Ben was Knoxville. I'm sure a lot of people remember Knoxville.
Yeah, everybody knows Knoxville.
Exactly, and me and Ben, you know, we kind of go where we go a little while back as well into like the first Liberty LAN I attended. He was doing Dota, I was doing Counter Strike. He was there at the 2014 event as well. Doing commentary for Pro Multicasting, if I'm not mistaken, that was doing the Dota as well.
Yeah.
So then it moved on to 2015. Pretty much the same thing happened. We did a little bit more things outside of normal competitive esports. We did Mortal Kombat X, which was with Stu Kennicore, which was quite an awesome success. A lot of the guys kind of went across the country to commentate on the events. But it was interesting though, because like back then I would commentate with the old Guitar Hero mic and a little webcam, a 720p webcam basically, and that was it, you know. And obviously my headphones as monitors, which was like a cheap pair of no-name brand headphones. But then NavTV kind of grew into 2015. We started to do we did the DGC, which was then at the time the Digital Gaming Championships. We obviously commentated throughout the year. We did various Telkom stuff, etc. I was working with Rob and the guys. Then moving on to 2016, NavTV did a lot of events like the Vodacom Gamers Fest that was at the Mall of the South. I don't know if anyone remembers that.
Yeah, I remember that. You guys did one at Cradle Store Mall as well, right?
That was like later. It was not the same event.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that event at Cradlestone, etc., was actually at like various malls. It was across, I think, four different malls.
Yeah.
And it was with Sasol and Growthpoint, the two companies that wanted to kind of do these gaming expos and competitions during. It was a huge technical task for us. But otherwise, like, yeah, it was cool. We did it and it was quite fun. And then I met Extremes also in that year. Did the ETH Tech Champions League, the first one. I remember sitting there 2 days before the Champions League, where we designed and built the studio in that second floor of the ETH building. Sitting there running cables and cutting my hands open, bleeding and stuff like that, to just try and make sure that everything was ready for the weekend.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, I've shed quite a lot of blood, actually, no jokes. literally with setups, you know, like the Gamers Fest. You know, there's one or two Telkom events that we were, you know, would set up the production stuff and all the cabling and all that. Because I'm a very hands-on type of guy. I mean, Sean can attest to it. Action.
Yep.
And I think you probably saw me a little bit in action this weekend as well, Camille. But
yeah, I'll get to my experience about that later. That was a real good experience. I'll give the audience a hint there.
I'm happy you enjoyed it. But yeah, so then. I mean, it's quite a story. Sorry, man. Like, I'm trying to go through this at like 1,000 miles an hour to give you a fly.
The TLDR is basically that there is one of the OGs of South African gaming. but we are going through the Old Testament right up until present day.
Yeah, the Old Testament. That's probably the best way to explain it. So where was I? I was talking about 2015.
2017.
Obviously 2016.
2016, sorry.
So then 2016, we did the Masters, the first Masters. I didn't get to do the Cape Town one. That was Barry and Lewis casting at the time. They were actually casters under Nav TV during this period of time. And then we got to, yeah, the ECL was also done in 2016. There's various
the first ECL.
Correct, yeah, the first ECL. There's various events that we also did, which I'm trying to remember. We did a lot of NAG stuff as well. We did the Rectron stand. I think that was in 2015, which we did the Heroes of the Storm competition in those funky booths that they built on the expo floor. But in the end of 2016, we did the Masters, and that was with Red Eye for the first time when he came down. And you know what a lack of chap he was. He was a really awesome guy to chat to and learn from and all that. And I believe he was actually at the expo this weekend. I didn't get to chat to him.
Yeah, he was here again.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. So yeah, then 2017 came around, but before 2017 started, Quese actually approached us wanting to purchase the business. Because obviously they at the time had a license. They just acquired a license with the ESL, and they needed a team to actually produce it, direct it, understand its technicalities for broadcast, and you know that was kind of the open gate for me to get involved. So then, basically, in May 2017, I joined Quese. Sorry, that's the right way to pronounce it. Which, you know, unfortunately, now they've closed their doors, but at the time was a very well-known broadcaster in Africa, and obviously in South Africa on specific platforms. And basically, unfortunately, the sale of Nav TV never went through. I got given a full-time offer to join Quese. And so the ESL 2017 event, the ESL African Championships, I met two members there by the name of Danny van Vieren and Wayne Pierce. And the reason why I'm mentioning those names is that it's quite relevant to the story. So they have their own companies in the production sphere called HD in Motion and various other businesses like the Media Cartel and all that sort of stuff. And in 2017, we obviously did our first broadcast in studio, like a proper green screen set with a big desk. Sean was part of that as well. And then we had the Rage Finals, which took place, obviously, that year, which was, in my opinion, the best produced esports event in South Africa.
Except for that, like, five-hour delay on day one.
That five-hour delay was not the production team.
No, it wasn't production, but it was just like...
It was a server problem, etc.
Starts off magnificently well, and... four-hour delay.
Yeah, it was terrible. Please do not remind me. No, 100%. But from a production point of view, producing that event, it was a mammoth challenge because, I mean, obviously I learned up enough information and skills and stuff at Quese through different guys that were at Supersport, that were at DSTV, that have been in the production environment for years, and I'm talking, you know, decades actually. And they taught me, and I taught them about esports and how the technicalities worked around that. So it was very much a combination of like both sides to achieve something like a full studio broadcast and obviously that event, which was cool because we had two North African teams, South African teams competing. So yeah, then basically after ESL 2017, things went quiet. Quiet for me because I kind of got shifted a little bit away from the esports stuff and started to work on the OTT platforms, which is your stream boxes. I'm sure some of you guys probably have one or two at home.
Primarily in the sports side, if I remember correctly, yes?
Correct, yeah. I actually produced a FIFA show for the FIFA World Cup called #FC, which was quite cool. So I produced it, directed it, cut, edited it, everything. I just had a guy that just did the camera work for it. But through that, I got to meet some really good football legends. I mean, Lauren, for example, from Arsenal, you know, Arsenal being my favorite team.
Fellow Gunner.
Look, I'll always be a gunner for life. But I mean, I also got to meet Aaron McQuinna. I got to meet Don Hutchinson, who played for Sunderland and Scotland as well. A very cool guy, Leroy Rosinha as well. There was Augustine, I can't remember his surname, but he was the Super Eagles captain actually for Nigeria a couple of years back. Well, a good couple of years back. Awesome people to work with. And yeah, like I was very much involved in sports at the time throughout last year, and you know, working on OTT technologies, understanding African markets on viewership, understanding what people are looking at and what they're consuming. Anyway, which brings me to the beginning of this year. Unfortunately, Quesay decided to close its doors, and in that kind of sense, they decided to retrench everyone. And well, I was kind of stuck on sitting on my butt, not sure on what to do. Do I go back into the network field, or do I kind of, you know, do I re-engage another broadcaster? You know, I was in a little bit of an interesting position, but then I decided, you know what, I think that there's a huge, and this is at least my personal opinion, there's a huge gap, and there's a huge, almost like a hollow piece or a hollow hole in South African gaming and esports, and that's got to do with production services and media and content creation and all that. So what I then did is I approached some of the partners I worked with at Quizzy, namely Danny and Wayne, and I brought another person that I was working with for a couple of years, Anthony Null, who's a very, how do I say, clever person when it comes to esports and understanding industries, like written a couple of things, I think, for Esports Bar, and you know, he's an extremely knowledgeable person when it comes to general industry standards and how esports needs to be conducted and all that sort of stuff. So I brought him in, and essentially we started this company called Game Time Media. And Game Time Media has now only been running for 6 months, and we have done, our first project was the EFTEC Champions League, which now obviously which we broadcasted to television. And
is that the first official esports broadcast to television we've had in South Africa? Am I correct in
saying that? It's the first local esports one sent to sent live.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Look, I don't actually know.
Because we've had I think it was the E-League majors were on. We're on Jinx TV as well for SA, but it was like at like 2-3 in the morning, so it was like very, very late and it was delayed, obviously.
TI plays on TV, but I mean like local broadcast, local tournament, local teams getting to play on live TV, I think it's the first one, I think.
Yeah, first live local broadcast of
I think, look, I mean, please don't quote me, but I do think that we are the first ones to go live to television. Look, I know that VS was on Supersport. But that was not live. It was post-produced and then support, which is quite cool. I think, you know, like I haven't really kind of dug in and did my research around this, but I do think there's a good chance that we were the first to go live to actual television. So then after that, we've actually been involved in various other projects. I mean, namely the MSI charity event with EVTech at the Rage production this weekend. So yeah, that's basically all my information around where I come from, and how I fit into the puzzle.
So yeah, like Nadia was saying earlier, it's clear you're one of the OGs in the scene, right? Long history.
What does OGs mean?
Originals.
Original gangster.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. I'll take it.
You can see how old he is, guys. In fact, you have to explain what an OG is to him.
All right. We actually like Junaid. It means orangutan ganja.
Oh wow.
I'm kidding. So obviously, one of the OGs in the scene. So what kind of motivated you to get back in the scene now, like with the Game Time Media things?
So it's like what I previously said. I saw a gap in the market. The thing is, if you carefully go and dissect the esports and gaming industry, it's not where it should be, in all honesty. I think there's a lot of pitfalls in the market. But before I kind of carry on to explain why I'm doing that, I'm actually more so wanting to explain to you what we do as a business, first and foremost.
Like what exactly the gap that you guys are filling in the market, right? Because we know there's lots of gaps there.
Our biggest, so the thing is, Game Time Eat is a white label solution. It's fully white label, which means that any person off the side of the road, any company, primarily a business, to a B2B kind of business, so we focus with the businesses. But we pure white label, which means that any company like Pete Spares would come to us and say, listen, I would like to run a Pete Spares tournament. I would like to have broadcasted. I would like
You're
to
a subcontractor, content. Essentially.
Essentially a subcontractor is probably one of the
ways to describe us. It.
But yeah, we're a white label solution basically for anyone. I mean, we work with various brands already, and though you will never see, unless there's a reason behind it, you'll never see a Game Time Media kind of logo just pop up out of nowhere. The thing is, obviously, with Rage, it's a different story, and with the ECL, there's also some reasoning behind that. But what we do as a business is that we don't even focus on tournament organizing. I mean, that's something that we prefer to actually outsource if possible. But essentially, what we do is we produce, create the content, do the live broadcasts, we create shows, even podcast shows, for example. Like I would take the Esports Central podcast and give it a Cliff Central type of feel, because I've got studio facilities to do that, I've got equipment to do that, et cetera, et cetera. That's kind of our forte. And what we do is we also create like magazine shows for broadcast, content for social platforms, for digital platforms, et cetera. I mean, there's so many things that I can really dive into when it comes to talking about the differences in the markets and how they all work and what the state of affairs is in South Africa and in Africa. Now, obviously, as a business, you know, you have to kind of get your name out there. And that is one of the primary reasons why you would see our logo on the ETH Champions League and at the Rage activation.
A marketing exercise, basically.
Correct, yes. There's a level of marketing we would do just to show the bigger partners and all the other partners that, listen here, guys, we can do this for you in a professional manner at a very high standard of broadcast. And still allow people to, how do I say, not lose an arm and a leg for it, so to speak. I mean, it's an affordable solution, etc. Look, it's not a two-man band with one camera type of affordability. It's a much more affordable solution than majority of houses out there that would offer you a solution. Yeah. The other thing as well with Game Time Media is that we're actually one of a kind, so to speak, in South Africa, where with the expertise that we have as a business. I mean, look, when I speak about my partners, these are guys that have been in Super Sport World. They've directed shows for Boots and All. They were the directors of KTV. They did all the Reggie's Rushes. They did, those type of shows. These are very creative guys, etc., that are now very interested in the esports market and have invested in our business. And they are partners of mine. And then, of course, Anthony as well, like from esports. So the structure of the business is quite simple. Myself and Anthony, we're the operational directors of Game Time Media. So we run all the projects. We go see the clients. But, behind us, we have got a very strong crew, a massive crew. A very strong experience, like directorship as well, experienced directorship that have been in the broadcast industry for decades, and we can basically create anything and everything pretty much around content and media for any client, so to speak, at any size. I mean, if you came to me today and you told me like, look. I've got the funding to host a IEM. I can host the IEM for you. No problem. I can get all the production gear in from the spider cams to the staging, to the lighting, to the booths, to all the specific small technicalities. I mean, we kind of showcased it at ESL and then again this weekend at Rage. Those are kind of like the smaller scale stuff, but also large scale in esports. But we can go even further than that.
what I mean. It yeah. also allows the opportunity for overseas brands, if they want to invest into South Africa or Africa again, there is a local provider that has got the expertise, content, and type of shows that they need. So that's our scalability, if you look from a business operational point of view. We can do the low-end streaming as well, the two-man streaming setup, etc. But it will have a lot more of a professional feel to it than what you've what we used to, because of the types of equipment I would use, types of crews I would use, etc., to produce the small scale stuff. But yeah, so
I mean, I just want to interject there quickly, Dad. I think I was obviously lucky enough to have the opportunity to work with you and Game Time Media this past weekend at Rage 4, the MSI show we put on there for Eve Tech, etc. With the Apex Legends, I got a cast with you, and I think. From me, from a caster's point of view, I mean, I've casted with VS, I've casted with Metal State, I run my own streams at home, barely managed to do that. And, like, working with you and the crew, in a level of production, and we had tweets and stuff going on Twitter as well, Frankie Bros, like, this is, like, international level shit he's seen. It was so amazing. There was a time where we were sitting there, I was casting, and a guy came to fix our camera. Like, I was like, what?
Is this now you have to go back to your home production.
Yeah. It was amazing. Like, it was honestly amazing. Even our producers were really funny as well. I'm just saying, like, the level of production was actually insane. The things, I mean, you had cams going, like, panning throughout the whole stage. You had webcams for the players so we could see player reactions and stuff. I mean, it was, like, really good stuff. You don't really see that in a lot of other South African tournaments. I don't think you actually don't see that kind of thing.
No, you don't.
And that's exactly why I started this business, is to start standardizing it. Start standardizing production and the sort of kind of level of quality for vendors out there, the companies that want to get involved in gaming, because that is also one of the fears. And this is the nicest thing for me, to have been able to work in the broadcasting environment with Quezzy, and then now kind of moving into the production and media side, which is like a step just before the broadcaster. I understand now a lot more as to what broadcasters want and what markets are looking for. And one of the biggest mistakes that people make out there, and I've seen it time and time again, is when they go to these conferences and they sit down and they start talking about gaming and esports in Africa and where it's going, people make the assumption that the digital way is the only way of doing it, right? I mean, I think many people have kind of said that. But in reality, when you're looking at Africa as a continent, we're not all 100% in line with the international markets.
I mean, internet in Africa is still, like, it's a privilege, whereas, you know, the rest of the world almost has it as a
100%.
It's, you know, it's almost like part of your water and lights in the rest of the world.
Yes, it's a human right.
Yeah, whereas here in South Africa, well, not even South Africa, I think we're relatively privileged, but the rest of Africa is still running on, you know, if you get a telephone line, you're pretty groovy for the day.
Yeah, 100%. But I mean, even in South Africa itself, the bigger play in content consumption is actually in the mobile market, because everyone's got a phone, of course.
Yeah.
But with the high data rates, it makes it very difficult for that consumption to kind of be long-lasting or very specific or, you know, continuous. Because, I mean, if you run out of data on any of the MNOs, it costs a fortune to go and buy more data. Now, obviously, there are certain MNOs that are bringing out, you know, cheaper packages. And I believe that, you know, there are regulations that are being put on them now with regards to the data prices, which is going to help kind of alleviate that slowly but surely. But essentially, there's another market as well that no one is tapping into from a gaming point of view, and it has to be tapped into. That is your pay TV and your terrestrial broadcasting market. There are millions.
Aren't those markets, like, on the decline worldwide?
Yes, worldwide they are, but remember that they are trying to talk about, they're talking about first world countries that are adopting the digital age.
In South Africa, you still have the situation where almost more people have DSTV than fiber.
100%.
No, certainly, but I'm saying, like, you know, how long do you intend to sort of, like, play the game? Because, as we know, you know, worldwide cable TV, DSTV in South Africa, like, it is declining. It's not a growing market. It's actually on the decline.
100%. But the thing is, it's still very relevant. But sure. Game Time Media is not just focusing on terrestrial and broadcast television markets, we are focusing all the markets from mobile to digital. I mean, if you go look at like the ECL, for example, the ECL was broadcasted on how many digital platforms?
Yeah.
Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch. I think we're going to go to Instagram. We can go to Instagram if we want to. But you know what I mean? Like at the same time, we're going live to a pay TV channel, normal broadcast channel, Jinx TV. So what we're doing is we're kind of bridging the gap of the old and the new, and obviously taking those older pay TV and FTA kind of viewers and kind of using them into the digital market. I mean, the guys will see the memes that'll be on the ECL, and they'll be like, oh, cool, where do we go to actually go see, you know, to enter this competition? And then they'll find out, oh, but there's something called Twitch. And some of them will actually start adopting the digital kind of way of things, whereas at the beginning they were only watching television. Only the DSTV was their only source of potential like content to consume. So there's still that huge market to go and kind of churn into digital viewers. Whereas, I mean, for example, look at Netflix. Do you know how many subscribers we have in South Africa for Netflix?
I'd guess probably somewhere in the high hundreds of thousands.
400,000.
Right?
Wow.
And that's pretty good.
I'm actually thinking what you're doing is like a reverse of what Overwatch League is doing, whereas they're introducing all the Twitch players to, from Twitch to ESPN, and you're getting more viewers that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess you're right.
Uno reverse card.
It is kind of a reverse card, yeah.
So I don't know if you can give us some more insight into this, but I always want to know, like, you guys have like stats and numbers from the kind of viewers you had, viewership during the ECL while it was broadcast on TV, specifically from the TV. I mean, you could all go on the stream and check out that kind of stuff, but so, on TV specifically.
So the TV numbers, I have not received a report yet for it. I mean, obviously, Multi-Choice has to submit the reports, and then we're still waiting for it at the moment. But just kind of talking about social numbers, we had 187,000 viewers, you know, just for the social platforms. I mean, that's fairly decent, you know, over 5 weekends. It's not bad at all, and there's obviously a certain ratio that you can actually go and convert that into. You can look at the amount of hours watched to the hours broadcast. There's a Nielsen way that you can actually go and create that statistic, and then when you present that statistic actually tells the brand how much value they've received. So there are means and ways to kind of report on it, and the proper ways of doing it. From a broadcasting point of view, look, I mean, Jinx TV, you know, they can get anywhere between, it's hard to say, but anywhere between 800 to like 4 million viewers a month, unique viewers. You know, it plays in that kind of category, so to speak. But there's still a large amount of content consumption on that channel, and that's the Africa feed, right? That's taking place. I mean, these kind of stats, essentially, I'm just kind of giving you like a rough stat. I know the specific stats, but I don't think I'm allowed to disclose them.
Yeah, okay. No, it's fine. NDAs are obviously a thing. So.
Yes, of course. But essentially, that's kind of what you're looking at. And when you're looking at free-to-air, now that's ETV, SABC, free-to-air markets. Those folks run in the millions. And I'm talking about high millions because, well, a lot of people still consume those free-to-air channels. And there's a huge gaming market sitting in that environment, right, that we've got access to, the broadcasters, so to speak, by the way, because of the company that we run.
It's network connections. We have.
Correct, yeah. That we're allowed to actually broadcast to these channels, you know, if there's the right deal that comes in and the right client that wants to do it. But like from a gaming market point of view, like that's a very massive untapped market that actually has true potential to grow the gaming on esports side, on casual gaming side, on nerd culture, on tech. All of those people are out there, and the way to get to them is via means of doing kind of going the reverse way, like Dr. Lily said. So yeah, I mean, it's like our strategy is very different to what majority of kind of esports players in the market are doing, and the reason for is that because of my experience in the broadcast industry and obviously the experience of our partners, etc., we see a huge amount of value for brands get into esports. Because, I mean, that's also another thing. They're scared. They don't know if they should get into esports because of the concerns around
profitability and
return.
And.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, that's why Game Time exists.
All right, that's pretty awesome. And I like the point about the free TV. But that, I think so many millions of people watch the ETVs, the SABCs and stuff every day in South Africa. If we look at our demographic, that's where most of our that's where most people are sitting on the social status, right? It's very unfortunate to be in that social and economic status, but it's a very real situation. I think, like, for me, if I think about it, I don't think any tournament organizer really, okay, besides ACGL, I think they do a good job of it. But I think for the rest of them, I don't think they really look to even try tap into that market to expand. It's just trying to appeal to the same, you know, 400 or 500 people who jump onto a Twitch stream to watch Counter-Strike or Dota. And I think that's not a viable solution in South African esports. We've been looking at tournaments and gaming with those of like CS and Dota being the same. Like, there's no growth because you're marketing to the same people all the time, which I think is a big fucking mistake. I think you need to adjust your business plan or you're gonna die, because you cannot run a business on like 300 people in on your Twitch stream. It's just not fucking feasible.
The problem is it's sort of like marketing to people that are already converts. It's like you're not going to get them to watch any more than they already do. So
to give you guys a little bit of insight as to like why that happens, and it's at no fault of the companies, the reality that they face, and in most cases, that they don't have the expertise. They don't have the equipment, for example, to produce something. Because remember, like, let's talk Jinx TV for a second here. I mean, when they take in content from us, there is a massive, massive list of things that we have to tick on our side to make sure that we can send them content. Yep. Not just any Tom, Dick, and Harry can do that, in all honesty, because you need to have the gear behind it. I mean, you saw the OB vans that we've got for live events, you know, like on-site, off-site, etc. And that is particularly one of the reasons why we started this business. We are becoming that middle ground, allowing for the brands to get in and tap into the traditional kind of areas and also the new areas at the same time, allowing for the production quality also to be like at a new level, a level that is and will, I can guarantee you, will rival international standards. Because I can see with majority of projects and international events, there are mistakes being made there and things that are being made there, etc., that are still kind of amateur. You know what I mean? But the thing is with us, I want to put us onto the map from a South African point of view, that the international viewers want to tune into our events because it's so well produced. I mean, look, from a technological point of view, there are things that we have not even implemented in our streams and in our broadcasts yet. Half of the new technology stuff, I mean, you guys have seen AR and VR and, you know, there are the, you know, stuff they do at the NFL. These are all things that we have got at our disposal at the studio.
Wow.
And, you know, these are things that I am busy carefully looking at on how to integrate. Because on the end of the day, the ECL, and this is also something just to explain, the ECL, there was something you mentioned about the qualifiers being disastrous.
Well, right? Yeah, that was the next section that I was going to start on.
Okay, cool.
Like the two issues. I think let's just like, I mean, we can go to that right now. Like, so obviously you guys have run the two primary events. It's the ECL, and now you did the Charity Cup.
Yeah.
And obviously there's been a couple of complaints. Firstly, with the ECL, obviously the qualifiers were an absolute nightmare. I think that anybody that participated in them or, you know, saw the whole thing was like the servers were obviously causing issues. You guys had to speed up the time limit, which means teams that had entered sort of had to like, you know, like a whole bunch of teams got hit with forfeit losses because of the fact that they couldn't, they didn't know that the games were running live, etc. So like, what exactly happened there? Like, what was the cause of the problems? Because obviously it meant that the first season ECL had like a couple of teams that, I mean, yeah, they qualified, but a lot of people would have said those are not the teams that they would have expected to qualify at the very least.
Yeah. So first and foremost, to kind of put it out there, we achieved what we wanted to out of the qualifiers. I know it sounds a bit like sensitive, but we got our six teams out of it. And that was the pure purpose for the qualifiers. Sure. However, which kind of ticks the ticks the objective, like, yeah, we've done it. Cool. It is a minor success. However, I will agree with you 100% that I think the biggest mistake that we made at the EPL qualifying stage was the timing. Closing the qualifying bracket literally the night before the qualifiers, I think, was the mistake. We looked in ways to remedy it. We were actually planning on closing it 2 days before the weekend. But the problem where what we faced is that we had various parties kind of asking us rather not to, because they wanted more people to try and register, which kind of gave us a new challenge because we didn't expect 80 teams.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that was a hell of a lot more teams than I think anybody expected, because 80 teams, we haven't seen that kind of competition in quite a while, even if it's open.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, also the other thing that I like to be straight up about with Game Time Media is that we do play open cards and we are transparent. And I will tell you exactly like where we go wrong, and we did go wrong with qualifiers. It wasn't disastrous. It was just not ideal. It's as simple as that. I think you know, a lot of the players complained about the seeding, where they were like, listen, the teams weren't seeded and all that sort of stuff. But we also have to be mindful of something. When we adopted the ECL, you know, it was a pilot project for us, first and foremost. But it was also a project to ensure that the partners involved get their return of investment well done and well produced. And we did that. We achieved that on all those fronts. However, when it came to qualifiers, we were met with a very, very big challenge. And the challenge is that a lot of people might not know this, is that whilst the top 10 teams sit and, you know, bicker about the season, etc., you have got 70 other teams. Now, looking at pure scale of people that want to be involved in a qualifier, immediately going like, oh, but we always favor the top guys. Oh, but this is always favoring them. So, now, this is probably not the best way to have done it, but I think for this, it was probably the only way that we could have done it to try and accommodate everyone in the competition. That instead of doing a seeded tournament, which in all rights and in most competitions is a single elimination knockout round, a really big bracket, and I've seen it from time to time. It's all based on single elimination events. We opted for a non-seeded double elimination, allowing for the top teams that, you know, potentially would be ranked up against another, have the second chance to get through. Now, once again, I will admit it wasn't ideal, but what we did achieve and get out of it was the top four teams that came out. And of course, there were two new teams, which was great. It's great, obviously, for support. It's great for fans. It builds up, you know, I mean, everyone likes the underdog type of story. And I just personally think that from a team's perspective, like the top team, you know, when you presented with a challenge like this, you need to step up on the day and make sure that you get into the actual group stages and qualify. You need to put your best foot forward. So there are certain elements I fully agree with that I think we can definitely take home, and we have taken it home, and we have, you know, looked at it, and we're going to redo it, make sure that everyone's happy or more happier. Because they
were mistakes. This is esports. Nobody's not every. They'll never get everybody be happy.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've accepted that years ago. Yeah. And the reality is that, like, yeah, we tried our best on how to accommodate for all of the teams, and we understand the pitfalls of it, and that's where we've taken it back, and we will re-engage this. And I can guarantee you that for the next qualifiers, there will be a seeded event. There will be seeded structures. There will be time for people to actually be notified. Like, for example, the communication, right? The communication, all team captains were communicated well in advance numerous times via email with regards to the times, with regards to the starting dates, all of that sort of stuff. But it was only the team captains. There were a lot of teams that did rock up on time, and a lot of teams that did play and rock up at 9 o'clock in the morning. And fine, fair enough. But what we are going to do as an extra measure for the next event is ensure that we've got a WhatsApp communication channel as well that will add all those team members, team captains at the least, into that WhatsApp channel, and a secondary to make sure that there's a second person to back it up, that will have, and it's an announcement group. We had it in the group stages for all the teams, just a general announcement group that would just tell the guys, okay, guys, please make sure that you're there and this time and so forth and so forth. And we will also close off the registrations earlier. We'll give it at least 3-4 days before the actual qualifiers take place.
All right.
We've learned. And look, it was a little bit of a cutthroat scenario, and we understand that it didn't make everyone happy. And you know, obviously, from my side personally, I'll apologize to the team that didn't have a great experience. But we have definitely worked on it. And
yeah. That's good to hear.
That's basically the gist of it for the ECL.
I think, yeah, the qualifiers was a bit rough, but like you said, once it got into the main event, it was quite a stellar show. At least from my perspective, this podcast perspective, we really fucking enjoyed it. I'll tell you that, awesome. At the very least. All right, so Nate, I just want to roll back the clock a little bit and ask you, when we're talking about like the other markets tap into South Africa, because like I was saying, I don't think people are doing enough to actually expand to the markets they need to be. So from you, from a Nate's perspective, how would you do it from a Game Time Media perspective? What do you think is the way forward to grow the scene from where our mass markets are, to be perfectly honest?
So the first and foremost thing that we need to do is standardize and start standardizing fast, because I think one of the biggest pitfalls at the moment is that you've got all these kind of different looks and feels about like esports and production around it. Remember, I'm from a production and media background, so I'm going to primarily talk about that. But I'm also going to talk about professionalism as well. I think that a lot of influencers, commentators, general personalities in the industry kind of up themselves into a professional manner and represent themselves almost like ambassadors of esports gaming. Another thing that people don't know is that we're official esports and gaming partners of Cricket South Africa. We signed that not so long ago, the couple of months back. So there's obviously huge interest in gaming and esports market. But the reality is that it just doesn't start with us as well to try and fix things. I mean,
for sure.
I wouldn't say fix things, but to build things. I mean, from us, what we provide is we provide that professional kind of content creation, production, all of those sort of kind of criterias we kind of hit quite well. I mean, we focus primarily on gaming esports, nerd culture, and then, of course, the tech and cultures associated with that.
Okay, so following on from that, obviously gaming and esports, it's a bit of the Wild West. It's certainly a lot more rough than what you'd see on, traditional television. Like, do you subscribe that, we need to keep that kind of vibe where, it is a little bit more jerky, it is a little bit more off the cuff. It's not as, super hard lockdown as traditional sports is. Do you subscribe to that or that we keep that in side of esports, or are you more of like the we need to be like pro sports, like suits and ties and all the normal shenanigans that you get with that kind of broadcast where it's like super professional, everything's above board, no real jokes, no real how can I say it?
No, exactly. What
ESPN
you mean.
Yeah. Stuff, right?
Yeah. Oh.
So I'm for both, in all honesty, and I think that's the way that esports.
It's a time and a place.
Yeah,
like 100%. Where it would be fitted.
I mean, if you look at Turner, for example, I often follow Turner quite a lot. But you remember the Thorin Shaq conversation at the panel desk? I mean, there was some really good banter going up and down between the two desks, and we've presented that to some seriously senior people in the industry, and they loved it. Yeah. So there's definitely a market, for banter. Wow. There's definitely a market for like kind of esports and the culture around it. But I think in certain circumstances, there will definitely be the requirement of a very serious broadcast, like a sports broadcast, because I mean, it's a mixture, really. And I think there is enough room to play in both those markets, well, on both those styles in esports and gaming. I think We mustn't ever lose it. We mustn't ever lose the quirky side of gaming and esports and the banter and the more tongue-in-cheek approach to certain things. It needs to be there. That's what attracts the kids. That's what attracts the when I talk about kids, I talk about us.
Yeah,
I mean,
the people that are actually going to be watching. The inbuilt fans.
The millennials. I mean, that's the other massive thing is at the moment, because majority of brands out there don't know how to target millennials. The reality is that we do. And I'm not talking about we as in Games Armenia. I talk as we as in everyone that's in the industry. We know how to target millennials. We know how to target the youngsters. We know what they're looking for. Traditional sports still has its place. And believe you me, I'm a huge cricket fan. Trust me. I mean, you guys see my tweets all the time. I tweet about cricket. I mean, today, AB de Villiers joining the Brisbane Heat. Massive thing for me. I'm still a traditionalist with regards to sport. I'm following the Rugby World Cup, and I think a majority of kids still do. But their interests, their hobbies are very much more kind of focused around gaming and stuff. And that's where the key lies. And that's where key like Game Time Media lies, for example. Being able to unlock that market to brands out there. Being able to get in and understand their thought patterns. I mean, that's the whole meme challenge, for example, with the ECL. Like, no one was really doing anything like that before, as far as I remember. Like, I don't think there was ever a meme challenge in local esports. So we brought that in, and I thought it was a really cool idea. The predictor game as well. I mean, the predictor game is actually quite old. We were going to implement that in 2017 with ESL, with the Big Five guys. And then that's a second screen option that's hugely valuable for markets. So just to, like,
yeah, for
kind of...
me, sorry to cut you off there, Nate, but for me, that was the biggest fucking wins from the ECL. I think from a social point of view, that meme thing, such an a creative way to get people to actually engage, not just, oh, I'm going to like the tweet and not give a fuck. People were out there making memes, extremes were retweeting it. People were engaging. Yeah. They were physically engaging, right? This is amazing. The predictor game as well. I think that's genius. What a new way to get people actually properly interested. They have chances to win things. I mean, think about how popular like fantasy football and that kind of stuff is in esports. That's wild. That's good shit. Even internationally, we don't see that kind of stuff. We are leading the scene in that sort of regard.
And this is the nature of South Africans. We all have to remember we are actually innovative. Like, South Africans in general are very innovative people, and I think it's time for us to be innovative in our esports and gaming. And I believe we are. In a lot of aspects, I'm not saying we're not, but I mean, like, from at least from our point of view, and the content we create and the events that we produce, stuff that we are going to be bringing in, it all has to be innovative, because innovation, that's what drives the interest. That's sure. What drives the people to actually consume the content more and more and more. They love seeing the flashy lights. The one thing I would always love to associate, and Sean's heard this before, associate esports to, is not exactly sports. Because sports is very much stuck in its own way and its own traditionalist style, etc. Sports is a little bit kind of a mixture. It's like WWE, to be honest. It's probably the closest I would think of. It's entertainment. People love watching esports because it's entertaining to watch. And people need to also respect it for that. Because I think that's another thing that people don't do. They don't respect esports as much as what they should. You know, South Africans are still very far behind in that sort of sense of respecting esports to become a very high-end competitive like kind of scene. And I'm not talking about me and you and, you know, the guys that are involved. I'm talking more so about the outskirts, the guys that know about gaming but also still kind of see it as just like it's a funny plaything. Whereas when you're looking at WWE, the entertainment part, that's what esports brings. But also, like I said earlier, it also has the sporting side. It's a very unique sport.
I mean, they call it sports entertainment, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. But it is pretty much in almost in that category. A little bit more on the sports side because there is serious competitiveness to it.
I think it's a very flexible scene as well, right? You know, you get some tournaments that want to be like flipping like the NBA level serious, but you get other things that are like, you know what, we're going to have a meme stream. We're going to have guys wearing funny t-shirts. We're going to have commentators being a bit more lax. So there's that balance also. You can
like
mix it up a
lot. Like the puppet show at TI. I remember that. I will never forget it. Those sort of things are awesome. And you know, it all depends on the client and the provider as well. We always have to keep that in mind. Like, if a client and provider comes to me and they say, Nate, I want a straight up professional broadcast, I'll give them that. They come up to me and they say, listen, make it a little bit more quirky, make it a little bit more entertaining and all that sort of stuff. Great. Then we focus on that. It's never been about, you know, sticking to one standard. The ESL was at one standard. When I looked at the MSI stuff done this weekend, that was a different standard. But I mean, yeah, we can move on to the MSI thing now and have a chat about that if you guys want.
Yeah, we can. I think on esports in general, us 4 years, we could sit the whole night and talk about that kind of shit.
Yes,
things
yes,
we wanted to see, but I think we got to move on to the podcast eventually. So yeah, let's get into the MSI thing. So just the overview of what we did there was that, I mean, we had, there was a MSI, ETHTEC, you guys, Game Time Media, are producing a show called The Hero Cup, or there's lots of actually things going on there at Rage at that MSI and ETHTEC stand. But it was a charity initiative with a whole bunch of influencers and stuff working for the Seeds of Africa charity. And then we had Apex Legends games with the people playing 45-minute games, myself and Nate casting it. It was like super hype and fun. The stage turnout and stuff was really great at the event. I thought it was really nice. And of course, I said I really enjoyed working with the Game Time Media because it was, if you looked at the stream and stuff, it was phenomenally broadcast. I mean, again, the player cams, the way our audio was set up with the casters, everything was, it was quite a seamless event, minus the one PC hiccup we had, but that's every fucking esports event because you're using Windows machines, it's going to happen, right?
Yep.
But then there was the case of, like, I think a lot of, you had a sort of backlash afterwards because you had some people making claims that, you know, what's going on with the GoFundMe, the thing's not shared enough. So there was a kind of, there was a mixed reaction almost to the MSI thing.
Yeah, no, there was. But before I get to that, I just actually want to say the massive amount of success that we achieved at this event. A lot of people didn't realize this, but we actually broadcasted six different titles, right? I think it was six, sorry. It was Rocket League, it was PUBG, it was Apex Legends, it was Overwatch, it was League of Legends, another one. What? Yeah, I think it was five, sorry. Maybe it was just five.
But I'm getting the schedule for you, Nate. Go on there.
Yeah. Get the schedule for me. But there were five different titles that we produced professionally in this matter, a seamless way across the entire day. And, you know, if you look at setups to produce for a particular title, you've got a particular crew that has to produce one title. We had one crew that did all of it, and a very, very unique, experienced crew. And then also we had a couple of newcomers as well into the team. We've got an intern, Robin, who's phenomenal. She's really great, 21 years old and a real serious gamer. But if you carefully looked at our crew was young, a lot of youngsters, yeah. You know, like guys that are into games and stuff. And these are guys that understand television production and all of that, but also, really enjoyed producing, you know, an esports event. I mean, so that's something that was quite awesome. It was a great achievement overall, you know, from the stream quality to what we produced. You know, it was the first of its kind that's ever been done. I mean, we were sending out streams to all locations. We were sending it to the NAG Facebook page. It was going to, if I'm not mistaken, MSI. It was going to ETHTEC. It was going to Gamtown Media. You know, like everyone was sharing the stream, essentially. It was being broadcasted to their platforms. And From that point of view, also, generally with events, you have something called a running order. A running order is something that kind of tells you exactly at this time this runs, at this time that runs, et cetera, and you follow it bit by bit. But what our director did is literally on the Thursday evening, we took the running order and threw it out the van, and we said, cool, let's go in with this one with our gut feeling and how we want to run this. And we produced this literally with our intuition, and we produced it with our understanding and experience with all the titles, because all of us have played it, and we know, like, obviously every person knows how to handle a camera or the jib, you know, the massive jib arm that was floating around. And we did it off the cuff because we felt more comfortable doing it that way, and I enjoyed that, and I have a lot of respect for that team. You know, you don't just get any production team like that, to be honest, that can do that sort of event with that sort of skill. And just to kind of before moving into the
side, we can go to that much later. Carry on with this. I'm enjoying it actually.
It's actually our company, almost. I wouldn't say ethos. It's not the right word to use. It's our company culture that we have at Game Time Media. I mean, we're bringing in new people off the ground like that are so into gaming, and we're educating them in sports and gaming culture and the content creation thereof. That it's super important that they learn this, because, you know, we want to teach the generations that are behind, like, ahead of us or younger than us, so to speak, and empower them to actually be professional people in this industry, because there is a job creation opportunity in esports. The only difference is that it's very little, right now. It's not very big. And I'm not talking about playing, for example, or playing in an esports team. That's a different esports field that I'm referring to. I'm talking about the back end stuff, producing stuff, being a director, being a producer, being a sound engineer, you know, all that sort of stuff. All young oaks, etc., that are coming into the market and being trained up by us to produce this esport. I'm very confident to say that we've got the one of the only kind of production team sports in South Africa. There's no one else that has got this type of expertise, and it's great to have it. You know what I mean? We can go and rock up at events and really, you know, set up shop and make it look absolutely spectacular without even having a running order in front of us. And that also is a key indicator on the expertise that we are dealing with. So yeah, like, you know, for us it was a massive success, and obviously a great success for MSI. They were extremely happy with how it went down, and EVTech as well. I mean, they're the partners also in this event. They were very happy with everything. But overall, it was definitely a very good success for everyone.
Yeah, it was. I mean, on that front, in terms of like the way it was produced and the way the show ran was great. I think I really enjoyed working with you, obviously co-casting, and then just with the team in general. I mean, we had a guy directing the show and observing Apex Legends like at the same time. That is no easy task, right? I mean, and they were dropping dank memes in our casters' headsets, like just for the shits and gigs. I mean, these guys understand the game, they understand the broadcasting. Y'all put on a great show, Nate, I have to say.
Thank you. Yeah, and I'm very proud of the team, dude. Like, it's literally the team that put on the show. Like, I mean, we all had our, how do I say, like, our hand in it. But this was genuinely, like, done from Anthony to everyone, like, involved. Everyone, I mean, we also had a camera crew running around the whole show throughout the whole weekend, or the expo, taking all content from all the stands, doing interviews. You know, we've got terabytes and terabytes of content that was created this weekend, you know, besides the actual event that was produced. And the thing is, obviously, like, we're there to show the bigger partners, like, hey, don't be afraid moving into the esports market. It's not that bad. Like, as long as you understand that the company that you're working with can produce you the results that you're looking for, then you're great. And that's basically us. If they want to create big scale events or big tournaments or you know, anything from content to shows and stuff, like, we're the guys that can do it. We've got the expertise for it.
Yeah, 100%. So I think that was some of the good stuff. I think it's about time we did some of the criticism as well that was kind of thrown at the event itself. Obviously, not your guys' event. You guys from Game Time Media just produced it, so I'll put that disclaimer out there. So it's not like it's Nate's fault for everything, you fucking podcast listeners. Just chill out a bit. I'm just saying. I was there myself. I was involved in the event. Like, obviously, well, just casting, not involved. I was just a guy. So obviously, the event went down, but we had a kind of backlash. We had people going out on social media saying that the stream, nobody's sharing the stream link. Is the stream even like a scam thing? It was like a whole big thing going on. We had a couple of influencers complain as well. There was an article written by Marco Cocomello, obviously the esports. I don't know what to call it, but he wrote an article saying things like, "Yo, the MSI thing was a big mess up. He feels like there was this wrong, that wrong." And I think there was some logic to the things he said. To be honest, he had a fair point. And it was like one of the things was just like completely off the mark. It's like the casters never spoke about the stream, the charity once. And I think that's the criticism coming, is that the charity wasn't promoted enough, right?
I was surprised that people's like first reaction is this now a scam with like all the big names involved? And that's your first thought?
Yeah, that was a bit of a yikes. MSI, EVTech, literally the biggest computer company in South Africa, scam? Okay, if that's where you want to go with this, that's all right. But I mean, we'll get to the reasons of that as well. But I think, so there was the backlash there, right?
Yeah.
Where was I going with that? I got confused. Oh yeah, we had Marco Cocomello saying like the casters never spoke about the GoFundMe, the charity once. It was like, okay, mate, we had 45 minutes of Apex Legends played. There was between 5 and 7 games played in those 45 minutes between each game. We spoke about the the charity and the sponsors and stuff involved in the event. So you can do the match yourself, Marco Cocomelo, to see how many times you actually spoke about it. But I think some of the criticism was warranted for me, because I'll give my perspective on this and then you guys can jump in afterwards. I think for me, the event itself was great, right? I think the
technical side, yes.
The technical side. But I think even the, like, I think you get a feel that some people are making, like, the charity was shortchanged a bit. And I think in a way it was, but it wasn't like it was completely shut on, because you also had a case of the big brands involved in producing the event also did their fair share of donating. I'm not going to give the numbers here and name the brands, but it was a massive amount to this cause, right? So it was holistically a good thing that happened. But it was also, I think, they did make a couple of mess ups. I don't think the event was marketed as well as it could be. And I think that is a bit of a mess up. I think, like, things like giving the influencers to tweet about it prior to the thing, using those kind of channels that were there in your disposal all the time was a bit of a mess up for me.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the link not being shared, and then it came out that, like, a member of production had their or was it, like, that they had their personal, like, GoFundMe attached to the account as opposed to just, like, the sponsor or the company?
Yep. So I can give some clarity on a lot of these things, because, I mean,
obviously, NDAs are going to affect what you can say. So
Actually, no. We at GTM are all about being transparent. So the thing is, for us, we will be transparent about it. And in all honesty, no company is at fault here. This entire event was, etc., and how it was run and orchestrated, etc., was done with a specific purpose. And I'll talk first about the production person's account. Now, there were some technicalities. There were some technical issues on EVTech and MSI's side with regards to PayPal accounts, creating it, getting it approved from head office. Specifically on an MSI's point of view, so there were technicalities to try and get it done and dusted, like using them as the account holders. So what actually happened is, because Game Time Media is a contracted company in this event, Anthony Nell is a operational director of Game Time Media, and he went. And we needed to get a link ready for Friday morning, because that was the directive. The directive was for the link to go live only on Friday morning of the expo. Not before, only during. Now, Anthony, obviously Game Time Media stepped in, and we quickly went and created a PayPal account, a clean PayPal account, allowing for the money to be transferred over to a specific account that didn't have existing money in it or any of that sorts. And we immediately then basically placed that account in the hands of MSI and 3Tech. Simple as that. The thing is, unfortunately, yes, his name was tied into it. But if any person out there did a little bit of questioning and maybe asked one or two questions to the parties involved, they would have got the right answer. Simple as that. Because I think that's damaged, obviously, the campaign quite considerably.
People a little bit want of... to actually donate.
Yeah, well, I mean, it looks sketchy. It looks sketchy
People wouldn't donate, of course. Then the next thing also, when people were talking about the influencers not sharing the stream and all that sort of stuff, there was a particular reason for it, right? First and foremost, the link was only to be made available on the Friday morning, right? That was the directive that was given, and that was the strategy that was put into place. Nothing wrong with that. It is, the purpose was for the Rage event, and obviously where one of the key things, social strategies was for the influencers involved. Now, obviously there was a lot of influencers, but obviously there was consideration put into account in a general sense. Where the influencers were told that they can, if they want to, share the link, right? Because they are not obligated, they're obviously not obligated to share it because they're not being paid. A lot of influencers would generally only share stuff when they're paid, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the rules were very much put into that sort of system. purely on the basis that this is a charitable event. We didn't want to go and like kind of create dodgy like perceptions because influencers are being paid now to play on a charitable event. People will just be like, what the hell? You know what I mean? Like, that's just not right. Whereas these influencers all, they volunteer to come and play. And we basically in turn said, like, look, we would really appreciate it if you guys share the links, which many of them did. And that link was only to be made available on Friday morning. Now, obviously, the influencers, some influencers came and asked for the link and wanted the link, and then they basically posted it out. And then some influencers were trying to force the link the night before, et cetera, to try and get their article pieces out around it and all that sort of stuff, which in turn, you know, created this whole debacle. Like, people have forgotten, guys, this is a charity event. If there are any sort of concerns, etc., just pick up the phone and find out from the guys what's going on. Because no one has got any cruel intentions in this charity event. Let's be honest here. We've got three reputable brands here. We've got MSI, we've got EVTech, and we've got GameTime Media. All reputable brands that are involved in this. Do you think for a second that they're going to be putting all their credibility on the line for something like a scam that's been called out? No, of course not.
I mean, scammer on charity, mind you. That's not even just like businessly bad, but morally you get so fucked up. That.
We came in on a charitable cause to make sure that this event is all covered, made awesome, etc. And, you know, influencers are put into a position to be showcased on stream and on stage and all that sort of stuff. The purpose of this entire event was only from goodwill. And it's a guarantee and it's a fact. The viewers out there can understand that there was never any ill planning behind this. And yes, given there could have been a little bit more social media posts, and I get it, right? But how many esports events have not gone through the same thing? I mean, ESL Africa, for example, had no social media on the weekend that it happened. And these things happen. It's sometimes just a little bit of human error. That's the only thing that kind of takes place. But, you know, why? I mean, this is a charitable cause. I mean, any person can just put 1, 2, and 3 together and realize, like, listen, these folks are not here to scam anyone. I mean, they're at the Rage Festival. Everyone's sitting on the stage. The broadcast is going out live to everyone to enjoy what's happening inside a Rage, because that's the purpose of it. And the stream is being advertised literally. I mean, come on, Camille, you were with me. How many times did I not talk about the stream all the time and it came up in a lower third strap?
Yeah, it was about 30 times easily.
Probably even more. I mean, on Sunday it was constantly going. And do you know what the funniest thing was, dude? Like, so if you put 2 and 2 together, that the whole weekend this actual link was being shared and we were talking about it and stuff, yes, I'm pretty damn sure people would have kind of figured out how to do it. Yes, it wasn't ideal to have the link not shared on the actual Twitch or YouTube pages, and I get it. I mean, these are all kind of minor mistakes that, you know, we'll look at for the next time and ensure that it gets done, you know?
Yeah, for
and
me, it's like, I think on that kind of things, I think obviously it is much easier if you have like a bot or a moderator in chat constantly sharing the link in stream. But I think it is an oversight. I think it is a mistake. But I don't think it's the kind of mistake that you'd go on Twitter and bitch about. I think especially if it was like a normal esports tournament, fine, fuck it. You know, I'm esports central. I'm Karma. That's what I fucking love doing. But I think for a charity event, I think it's probably just better to go, yo, sign into somebody's DMs, be like, yo, can you guys do this for tomorrow's stream? I think it'll help a lot. I think that's a form of charity, helping a cause, right?
And the thing is, obviously, like, everyone is like, listen, they understand their mistakes. They're very happy that they've raised over 20,000 rand for this for the Seeds of Africa. But if you go look at the actual social campaign, let's talk about that for a second. Every single influencer was already featured about 2-3 weeks. If you look at those posts that were coming out from EVTech on their Instagram, on their Facebook and stuff, you go back, go look. Everyone was being featured there. Like, we had Frankie B, we had Grant Hines, we had literally every single person that was featured. So there was already a campaign started by everyone to drive this Hero Charity Cup. Because also something to consider is that this was not just for the people on stream. It was also for the people sitting in the stands. And you know the coolest thing was, I got a mail yesterday evening, by a father that said that he did a push-up challenge. You know, Reese was doing the push-up challenge with some of the guys on the floor for some prizes. He did a push-up challenge. He had his two boys there with him. And the emails, like in the email, he said that his oldest son that was 10 years old was crying because his dad won. And they've actually asked us now for that content. Now, I've got my production teams working day and night now to try and find that content and hoping that they have it because we were running adverts during that time, right? And I'm praying that at least the camera picked it up or they were actually shooting it at the time. Because, you know, those sort of things are priceless. And that is exactly what we brought this weekend. It was an amazing event done by MSI, EVTech, and GameTime. It was really, really amazing. And I thought the guys at MSI are sitting there and they're super happy with what they've done. The guys from EVTech are super proud for what they've done. The same with the GameTime Media guys. And look, I mean, we can take some of the stuff that was written and was posted and we can definitely work on that. Definitely. But I think like in a case like that, if I was sitting in the shoes of trying to tweet out something, etc., I would have contacted these people first and asked them. I would have asked them, what's going on, you guys? Before I send this like post out or article or whatever the case may be, I would have gone and done my little bit of an investigation because I'm writing something because I'm an influencer. I'm someone of importance that influences people's opinions.
Yeah, I mean, we in the age of optics is everything, right? This is the whole thing about the MSI event, right? It could have been the greatest event. It did have its flaws, but I think then your the image now of it is that it's a stained image because you have this one. So even if somebody says it's a scam and it's like, okay, no, sorry, it's not a scam. They clarified this. They spoke to the direction, but you still now in your head that image is planted. The optic of it is already changed.
Perception.
And that's the perception, right? And in esports. I mean, I'm gonna be straight up with you. I'm one of those people who are shitting on people in social media saying this. Like, I'm known as one of the guys with the spicy opinions. But I think, in general, our scene has a... I don't think esports in South Africa has good optics at all. Like, on all parties. It's just like, we're just not one of those scenes. I don't think it's as bad as us insiders like to say also, because every scene has its shit. But it's also sometimes it's like, yeah, do we really need to be saying these things? Do we really need to be doing these things? It's just, it gives you something to think about, right?
So, yeah, look, I mean, what was said is what was said, unfortunately. But I still think that irrespective of the stain that was created, the success of the event was there 100%. And everyone had a very good time. I mean, I really enjoyed it. My crew enjoyed it. The guys at MSI loved it. The guys at EVTech loved it. We all went home and we were all like, yes, we did something amazing. And that is exactly the spirit that we wanted and we created. So yeah, kudos to the team. Definitely it's a team effort.
Yeah, for sure. And just like on the topic again, I think I'll sit in the middle. I think no event is immune to criticism, or no person or entity is immune. I think criticism is part of the gig. But then I think also I understand why people would feel that, you know, a name like a person's private name paper looks like fishy for a charity. But then at the same time, it's like it was also a human error thing.
Should have been created earlier.
Yeah, for sure, it was a mistake, but I don't think I don't think it was malicious, right? But I think it just looks bad. Yeah, it looks bad. So I think there's like a midway in this whole thing. But like you said, I think the event as a whole is a big success. I personally really enjoyed it.
100%. But yeah, I mean, you know, kind of moving onwards, you know, GameTime Media has got a lot of projects on the go at the moment, so you guys are definitely not going to see The Last of Us until this year. This year, we've still got things coming. You know, Cricket South Africa, our new partner and stuff, we've got a huge, huge esports project that's coming, and they're very keen to get involved. I mean, we haven't made an official announcement as of yet with Cricket SA, but... We will be making an announcement after we've shot one or two videos and interviews with them, just from a Game Time Media and Cricket SA point of view about the partnership. But I thought I'd just, you know, kind of leak some information out here that we've got this partnership. Also, not everything is Counter-Strike and Dota with us. Just bear in mind, we've got a new tournament that's coming out, a little bit more entry-level type of tournament that's going to be streamed out to all the social platforms, etc. It's going to be really rad. I'm not going to release the title as of yet because there's a community that's prying with their ears and waiting for the announcement, but we'll get there and it'll be very soon. Then there are other two tournaments that will probably be releasing this year as well. And then we'll look at another ECL, ECL will not just be Counter-Strike, by the way. It is going to expand into other tournaments, other titles. But those titles
will be released in due time. Well, it's awesome having you on the show, Nate. It was great to get that insight from one of the OGs, you know, Orangutan Ganjas from
the like over-educated now.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
So if you want to follow your brand, I mean the content that's going to come out from Rage and yourself, where's the best places to do that, Mr. Nate?
So basically, Game Time Media is on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. I believe we opened up an Instagram account today just because people are like, oh my gosh, why don't you have Instagram? So yeah, no, we're definitely there now. Me personally, I've got my Twitter account, Burning Red Today. It's very simple to find. But otherwise, yeah, we've got some announcements with regards to content places that we'll be going to. We will definitely be doing more stuff for Jinx, TV, content that will be going through to them. But otherwise, like, you know, we've got some homegrown shows and all of that we're busy producing and directing and shooting at the moment. So we'll probably have a couple of those on our YouTube. Our YouTube is also Game Time Media. Yeah, you can find us there. You can find us on all those platforms.
All right, awesome. And that's a wrap for the show. This is episode number 62, ladies and gentlemen. That was a great show. You can find us on Twitter as well, at KChickte, at G_KAYY, ST Gutterlily, and of course PORFECI Gaming. And of course on the publication, Esports Central ZA, Facebook at Esports Central ZA, Twitter at Esports CENTRR, at the World Wide Web, Esports Central ZA. Thank you guys for tuning in, and goodbye.